And now here are some of the letters received at the evening news during the past week. Pat Guite from Eton has praise for the NHS. So, readers, for a change, this is not a letter telling you what you, the government or official bodies should be doing or not doing, because I know better than they, or that I'm more learned, therefore my views are correct. I'm just an elderly female who doesn't put titles before or qualifications after my name just to impress you as to how clever I am. This letter is in praise of the NHS and our wonderful university hospital. On Sunday, November the 3rd, I had cause to visit A&E. From contacting 111, under pressure from my family and a suggestion from a retired nursing friend, I was taken to A&E. From the time I was wheeled through the entrance, I was dealt with swiftly and with kindness. An ECG followed by a chest X-ray, blood tests, and then a physical examination and diagnosis by a very kind, jolly doctor with a lovely Scottish accent. All of this took just under 3 hours. All of the nurses and doctors were excellent. Although busy, all were kind and took time to explain procedures. We are told that the NHS is broken, but on that Sunday, there was no evidence of that. Thank you to all the staff at the University Hospital.
Concern about budget leaks prompted Tim Bornett from Old Buckingham to write. How conventions have changed over the years. Ministers were expected to resign if A, department civil servants were guilty over maladministration, and or B, ministers themselves were personally responsible. In 1947, the Labour Chancellor Hugh Dalton had to resign because the day before budget he had either inadvertently or deliberately leaked some elements of the budget to a reporter. This was considered extremely serious, as speculators could have speculated on prior information. Over the past month or so, it appears deliberate leaks about budget details have emerged to soften up the public about so-called difficult decisions. No wonder the Commons Speaker, Lindsay Hoyle, has condemned this as bypassing the need to inform Parliament first. Conventions can be flexible as not part of a written constitution, i.e. certain statutes. Perhaps the UK should have had a founding written constitution with separation of powers, such as in the US. However, with the recent events in the US over the past few years, this is no guarantee. Any ideas how liberal democracy can be upheld?
Our next writer, Dr. Oliver B. Steward from Norwich, also has a comment about the budget, but not on any financial aspect. There is a publicly released photo of the Labour Chancellor, the Right Honourable Rachel Reeves, preparing for the budget in the office. However, what is striking about the photo is the fact that the Chancellor has replaced the portrait of the former Conservative Chancellor, Lord Lawson, with a portrait of Ellen Cicely Wilkinson, 1891 to 1947, overlooking the number 11 desk. It is worth noting that Wilkinson was a founding member of the British Communist Party, who later became a Labour MP in Westminster. During the Second World War, the Right Honourable Ellen Wilkinson served as the wartime coalition government's parliamentary secretary for the Home Department. Furthermore, Right Honourable Wilkinson served as chairman of the Labour Party from January 1944 to August 1945, and in 1945 was appointed a Privy Councillor, both notable achievements considering the historical context in which she served. Rachel Reeves's decision to change the portrait demonstrates a shift in both political and economic perspectives. Although I consider the Chancellor to be more of a centre-left social democrat than a democratic socialist, the change of the portrait reflects the evolving political mindset at the heart of the Treasury. The question is whether removing Lord Lawson's portrait suggests a broader shift towards more progressive and compassionate economic policy making. The answer will become clear based on how Labour addresses the economy in the upcoming weeks and months following the budget.
Finally, Harriet Cockle from Milam comments on renewable energy. I'm getting on a bit now and not particularly scientifically or technically minded, but I can't help noticing that there has been absolutely no wind or sun for the last week or so. Should I be concerned about our seemingly headlong dash to wind or solar farms?